Modern funerals, they're changing. It's estimated that the funeral industry in the U.S. is a $20 billion a year industry. Funerals can cost an average of $8,000 to $10,000. Although the traditional funeral with a casket and cemetery burial remain common, many people are now making other choices. In recent years, the industry has been changing. Not only are more and more families choosing cremation, but they are also choosing alternative kinds of memorials and burials. For example, there are now green cemeteries and home-based funerals. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, we'll discuss some of the options now available to families and what they entail. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Changing times bring changing attitudes, and that applies to the way people approach funerals. From green burial practices to unconventional ceremonies, modern funerals often break with tradition. Our guests here are to talk about some of these new approaches. And joining me in our studio, Allison Rector. She is a board member of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine. Chuck Lakin is a retired Colby College librarian and home funeral advocate. And Mike Hall is president of Hall Funeral Homes. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you given thought to your own funeral? Have you been a part of a non-traditional ceremony? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Mike Hall, we did not plan this program because of this, but I understand that November is the Have the Talk of a Lifetime month. Tell me what that entails. Why is there a month dedicated to having the talk?
Right. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. November, end of the year, is a time when families get together, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So it's an appropriate time when families are together to share and learn about each other and what's important to them and what they want for their funeral. You know, and the Talk of a Lifetime program, and I have some cards for you that I'll share with you, that you can basically ask your family members questions. You know, what was your favorite topic in college? What's the favorite sport? Or when did you meet your wife? And so my wife and my family, we did this as an exercise this summer by our campfire. And it was amazing not only to learn more about ourselves as family, but also our friends. You know, we think we know our friends and family, but it really opens up a door to a more personal and more personal depth.
So you're advocating for, when you say the Have the Talk of a Lifetime, you're not just talking about asking a loved one what they want to happen after they're gone. You want to get some more meaning from their life themselves, find out things that you may not know.
Exactly. Because, you know, as we face maybe the end of a life of one of our family members, a lot of times we're grasping, you know, trying to be like, well, what was our favorite thing about Dad? You know, and when you have conversation and you talk about it, you learn what's important about your loved one. So when you're planning for the funeral, memorial, or celebration, whatever you want to call it, it gives you an opportunity to personalize the gathering and services and reflect on what's important for your family.
And we'll put a link up on our website, but it's talkofalifetime.org. Allison, turning to you, what is the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine? What's the purpose of your organization?
Yeah, the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine is a all-volunteer nonprofit, and we're dedicated to educating the public about funeral choice and your rights as a consumer when someone dies. We are a chapter in Maine, but it's also a national organization that's available to consumers all across the country. I happen to serve on the board here in Maine, and I'm also a national board member where we advocate for funeral rights, look at legislation nationally, and work together around the country.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions you believe that most people have about their rights?
A lot of people don't realize that embalming is a choice. It's not required by law. and people don't know that it is still legal to care for your own family members at home yourself if that's something you choose. And we always encourage people to work together with the funeral director, like Mike, to talk about what it is they want and pay for the things that they want and not pay for the things that they don't want. So shop ahead of time, get prices, and make it the service that you really want and the services that you want to pay for at the price you want to pay.
All right. Well, Chuck Lakin, you've been on Maine Calling before. Welcome back.
Thank you. And
in the time since you've been here, you have done your own home funeral. Tell us your story. If you can.
Yeah.
It's fine if you can't.
No. My wife was diagnosed with brain tumors almost exactly 2 years ago. Mm. And she was died only 11 weeks later. But she was home for the last 5 weeks of her life. And she was right there in the living room. And hospice was terrific. You know, if anybody at the end of a life experience and you insist on that your doctor give you a reference to hospice, because they are terrific people, had everything we needed. It was great. People were coming by and visiting, bringing stuff over. And right up until the time she died, after that, we took care of her right there in the room. A couple of friends came over and we washed her and dressed her. Thought she was a private person, so we kept her body in the back room, but we had the coffin right out there in the middle of the living room, and people that came over to sort of the three-day-long wake that we had were invited to write, draw, or paint something on the coffin. We had markers there, and fourth day we took her up to Rainbow's End, the Green Cemetery in Orrington, and we put her in the grave, and then we filled in the grave.
Knowing you, I'm certain that you and your wife talked about this beforehand. What were her wishes? What did she say to you?
She really didn't. It wasn't the long conversation. You know, it was just she'd been listening to me say all this stuff for so long that she just sort of it was understood. You didn't have to go into any kind of deep discussions about any part of it.
Well, let me go back a little further then, and you are a woodworker, you make caskets. Is it through that work that you got involved in this movement toward home funerals and choice?
Other way around. The experience of my father's death was what got me interested in home funerals. It was a very personal experience with my father up until the time he died. I mean, to the point where he was in his own bed with his wife and four kids touching him when he died. This was 1979. And I wanted to be a part of whatever happened next and had no idea what I could do. And it wasn't until almost 20 years later that I found a manual written by a woman in California named Jerry Grace Lyons that was trying to help people take care of their own dead. And so I started talking to people about this, not trying to convince them that they ought to do a home funeral, but if you wanted to do a home funeral, this is the information you would need to have, the experience I wanted to have when my father died. And then it's grown a lot since then. And if you're a woodworker and you talk about home funerals, of course you're going to make coffins.
Mike, how have the services of the traditional funeral industry changed in the last decade?
I don't think we have enough time. it's changed a lot. I've been a licensed funeral director for 28 years. So when I came in on the scene, at that time, about 70% of Maine families chose burial as a form of disposition. Now that's flip-flop. Now it's 70% cremation.
70% cremation in Maine.
In Maine, yeah. So nationwide, it's just over 50%, depending on where you are in the country. So witnessing that early on, you know, I think kind of to Chuck's point, my kind of the older generation of funeral directors were struggling with the change of cremation as a form of disposition. It wasn't entirely their fault. I just think they didn't ask questions of the families, or they didn't have the information, the education that someone like myself has today. So when people are choosing cremation as a form of disposition, there's a lot of things that families need to think about. Our predecessors didn't have that information, so they assumed a lot, and unfortunately, you know, some families maybe didn't get what they wanted, you know, and so as time has moved forward, there's been a lot of education efforts going forward to help professionals like myself listen to what families want, and try to meet them where they're at and meet their needs. And the other side of it, sometimes, as we discussed earlier before we came on air, a lot of times the conversations within families are about a disposition choice, either cremation or burial, and that's kind of where the conversation ends. So families are coming in, well, Dad wanted to be cremated, and that's about all they really have for direction. So in my role, I tell people, it's like, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to tell you what's right or wrong. But what I do offer is my experience. I have a lot of experience with families, helping them and guiding them.
Other than the increase in cremation, increase in percentage of cremation, what are some of the other kinds of services that people are coming to you for now that maybe they weren't earlier in your career?
Oh, very good question. You know, it's evolved quite a bit. You know, much more personal today, personal as far as music, readings, venues. You know, in the older days, it was mostly either at the funeral home, you know, or the church where services took place. And today we're everywhere. We're at families' homes. We're at Pemaquid Lighthouse. You know, we're at the Botanical Gardens in Boothbay Harbor. You know, so, you know, for me as a professional, when I'm working with families, I ask families, you know, is there any place that's important to your loved one? Well, Mom loved the Botanical Gardens. You know, so what an appropriate place to have her service. So we work in conjunction with the Botanical Gardens and the family to do that. So it's really evolved, and I think it's a positive. You know, and the hard part is trying to get families to participate more in the process. Not everybody's comfortable doing so, and that's okay. You know, we respect that. But, you know, you find that the more personal we can make it, the better we can honor the family.
Allison, what is the law? What is the bare minimum of what one must do when someone dies with a body?
Well, I'm not a lawyer or a legal expert, and Chuck has helped me a lot, so I'll look to my colleagues on this. Chuck, actually, would you answer that question?
Basically, the only legal process is just doing the paperwork. There are no rules about taking care of a body at home. You know, there are things that you need to know how to do, but there's no laws or regulations about that. You know, the paperwork is the only legal framework that you have to follow.
Is there an option in this state, in this country, other than cremation and or burial? Or burial in a cemetery?
There are several people working on some things, but you also need to know that there is an option to a flame cremation called alkaline hydrolysis or natural green cremation, and the option to an in-ground burial in a conventional cemetery is being buried in a green cemetery.
All right. And I know that in Maine, and you went to Rainbow's Edge, and we're going to hear from another green cemetery in just a few minutes, so I don't want to go into this too in-depth. But if you want to have a green burial in a casket that does not have concrete, does it have to be in a green cemetery, or can you have a green burial in a non-green cemetery?
Yes, you can bury. It's legal to bury on your own land in a family burial ground in Maine. You have to check with your town about that, but a lot of people ask about that, and people do it. So, if you're interested in a natural burial, you should ask the cemetery what their regulations are. Even municipal cemeteries may allow it. Each cemetery has their own regulations about what they require in terms of a concrete vault or a liner for the grave. So, it doesn't have to be at a strictly natural burial ground.
And it's true that people just need to, in all aspects of the process, you just ask for what you want, because people are so used to doing something in one particular way. But if that's not satisfying to them, they can just ask. And somebody like Mike is the kind of funeral director who would just say, our job is to help you have the experience you want. And the same thing is true with the burial. You go to your local cemetery and just ask if you can have a natural burial or if they'll set aside a portion of their grounds for that.
And Mike, how do you find a funeral director like you, somebody who is going to listen to the family and help them explore their options, especially in a time, especially if a death has come suddenly and unexpectedly?
Right. Good question. Most of our local community funeral home owners are people that know their community, are very active within their communities, and will listen to families and meet their needs the best way they can. You know, for us, we're a member of Selected Independent Funeral Homes, which we've been a member since 1969. It's by invitation only. So we have to basically meet certain criteria for ethics and standards. So we subscribe to a higher standard and best practices so that we ensure that we listen to families and make sure that they are getting what they want. The Maine Funeral Directors Association, another group of professionals within the state here, I think what you'll find is that the people who are active within their state associations or national associations are leaders in their industry. They want to do what's right. They want to be ahead of the curve and finding what consumers are asking for. It's really important. And I think, you know, if most people in our small communities here in Maine probably know their local funeral director. If they don't, like any trusted advisor, I highly recommend go introduce yourself. Meet them. You know, if they meet your criteria and they're open and they're going to help you, then that's going to work out. If they're not open to you and your wishes, then go on to another person who will help you.
Jennifer, if I could add to that, we agree with Mike. The Funeral Consumers Alliance recommends that people talk to one or two funeral directors well ahead of time before it's a crisis, not in the moment of grief. And, you know, by talking to one or two funeral directors, finding the one that's right for your family, you can find the personal attention that's really going to best serve your family, and you can often also save a lot of money. There was a national survey done that National Public Radio reported on that shows by going to two funeral homes and asking for the prices ahead of time, you can save thousands of dollars on the services you're looking for.
I'll go to Paul, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you very much. I'd like to reference everybody to a book called Caring for Your Dead by Lisa Carlson. She wrote this book about 25 years ago. It's really an amazing resource. She's done a state-by-state analysis of what you can and can't do in each state because each state varies. We used it in Vermont about 20 years ago for a home funeral, and it's a wonderful resource and a wonderful story of her journey to help advocate, as all these people on the call are doing, for home funerals, if people want to. So it's a wonderful book. It's a wonderful read. And she goes state by state and gives all the information you need in each state and what laws you can do. Because a lot of the laws actually restrict the ability to transport the body. And that's the way that there's been a fair amount of control around funerals, is the transportation of the body in most states is required by a funeral director, not in Maine, though.
Thank you, Paul.
And there's an update. That book has been completely rewritten by Lisa Carlson, the original author, and Josh Slocum, who is the current executive director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. It's now called Final Rights.
Final Rights. Well, thank you both for the recommendation. We do have to go to a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Bowdoin College, a leader in the study of the environment, educating people who will change the world. Bowdoin.edu.
Hey, this is Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News. From sunrise to sunrise, all around the clock, Maine Public Radio is there for you, covering the latest in local and national and international news and bringing you the very best of NPR News. You rely on public radio, and public radio relies on you, which really is the way that it should work. The people who use this service are the largest single sources of support for this service, which is how you know that we act in your interest. We're working in your interest. More than 70% of funding for Maine Public comes from people like you, so consider making a donation to support public radio in Maine today. Visit mainepublic.org and click the red donate button and give now.
Our Let's Grow Together membership drive starts Tuesday, but you can pledge right now at mainpublic.org or at 1-800-866-1475.
Thanks for all your feedback over the years and your suggestions, too. Hi, this is Sarah Willis. The one thing I've felt really badly about is not being able to satisfy your requests for more music and at different times of the day. Well, that problem has been solved. Visit mainpublic.org whenever you want, anytime, all the time, and click on Listen Now. You'll find a new choice at 24/7 in-tune online stream. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Modern Funeral Options. Joining me in the studio, Chuck Lakin, a home funeral advocate, Mike Hall, president of Hall Funeral Homes, and Allison Rector on the board of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Allison, if somebody wants to learn more than they're learning on Maine Calling right now, you have an event tomorrow. Tell us about it.
Yes, the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine is hosting a free event tomorrow. It's called Natural Burial and Green Cemeteries. It's happening in Falmouth at the in the auditorium of the Episcopal Church of St. Mary on Forside Road in Falmouth. It's a free day that's going to involve a film being shown about a green cemetery being formed and some families using it. We have coffin building workshop happening. We have two women coming from Western Massachusetts who are involved with an organization called Green Burial Massachusetts, where they work with municipalities and land trusts in Massachusetts to encourage green burial as an option for consumers. So everyone is welcome to come to that event tomorrow, 10 to 3 in Falmouth. And our website for the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine has more information.
All right. And I'm sure we'll be posting a link to that as well. On the line with us now, Joyce Foley. She is owner of Cedar Brook Burial Ground. Joyce, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it.
So what is Cedar Brook Burial Ground? It's one of the green cemeteries we've been talking about, right?
Absolutely. It was formed back in 2007 by Peter McHugh and myself. And Peter has since passed away and is, in fact, buried up there. And we've had fabulous response from our website, from word of mouth for people who wish to be buried environmentally sound and in a cost-effective manner.
If we were to go to Cedar Brook, how does it look? Does it look like a traditional cemetery?
No way. It's a very treed area. Peter owned 150 acres here, and we converted 3.5 of it into the cemetery. It has pine, birch, maple, oak trees. We have random selection of grave sites. It makes it much more personal. It's just, a beautiful, peaceful place for someone to have their final resting place be. We have an old cemetery there as well, the Joshua Small Cemetery, and that dates back to the mid-1700s, early 1800s. It's the cemetery of the family who originally started this property.
If somebody uses the phrase natural burial, what does that mean? How is it different than a traditional burial? Is it only because there's no concrete lining in the casket, or is there more to it than that?
Well, to me, it is that, in fact, no concrete vault, a simple wooden coffin or a shroud. We have a gentleman who opens and closes the grave sites. He's been doing it in this area for 25-plus years. We put green boughs in the bottom of the grave site to make it more peaceful and inviting, if you will. But I really believe that going back to nature, and I frequently quote a Kate Braestrap's vote, the here if you need me, in one of the pages she's talking to her children, and they ask her how she would like to be buried, and she tells them that she wants to be buried naturally, no embalming, under a tree, so that when her body deteriorates, she's feeding the trees, and when her children visit her gravesite, the wind blowing through the trees is her voice talking to them. And to me, that sort of epitomizes what Cedar Brook and what green burial is.
Finally, Joyce, I want to ask you if cremated remains can be buried or scattered at Cedar Brook.
Absolutely, yes. As long as they're in a biodegradable, for those that are buried in a biodegradable container, no problem.
All right. Well, Joyce Foley, thanks so much for joining us, owner of Cedar Brook Burial Ground. And what town, Joyce?
In Lymington.
In Lymington, that's right.
Which is near Standish.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye.
And also joining us now is Rabbi Gary Berenson. He is with the Portland Jewish Funeral Home. Rabbi Berenson, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Jennifer.
Share a little bit about what traditional Jewish law says regarding funerals.
Well, I preface it by saying it is traditional because there are different denominations of Jewish burials, but the traditional law says that a Jewish burial is essentially a green burial. By that, I mean that we do no embalming. We do no preparation of the body that alters its natural state. We use a burial container that's either wood with no metal in it, doesn't have even nails, it has no hinges, or we can use a burial shroud that's made of cotton or linen or something that's 100% biodegradable. The other thing is that in a traditional Jewish cemetery, there is no burial vault, so that the receptacle placed right into the ground so that it returns to its natural state as quickly as possible. As a matter of fact, if we use a wooden coffin, we actually drill holes in the bottom of the coffin before the burial to hasten the deterioration process.
I understand volunteers play an important role when it comes to preparing the body. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, we have a set of men and a set of women who are dedicated to helping prepare a body in a ritual way. So one of the things that it's important to us is maintaining the laws of modesty. So in a commercial funeral home, a man could prepare a man or a woman, and same with a woman. In a Jewish funeral home, only men prepare men, and only women prepare women. So it's a traditional ritual cleansing of the body, and then the body is placed into a funeral shroud, all done by people of the appropriate sex, and they will be reciting prayers that have been handed down for approximately 2,000 years, so that the burial process is pretty similar to what you saw in biblical times.
We've been talking about green burials, but we've also been talking about home funerals, and a home funeral is something that is traditional in a Jewish home, I understand.
Well, it was traditional, certainly, in the old countries, Europe and Russia. And when the immigrants first arrived here in the United States 100 or 125 years ago, that's what they knew. So they would, when someone died, they would prepare the body for burial themselves in their homes. As a matter of fact, but they usually prepared the body in the parlor of the home. And, you know, that's what the living room used to be called, the parlor. And the term funeral parlor came from that. So it's just been carried through. It wasn't unique to Jewish families. A lot of families did that, prepared people in the parlor.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Rabbi Gary Berenson with the Portland Jewish Funeral Home. And Mike, I remember learning that last time we did a program on this topic, is that the funeral parlor really came to be a mainstream part of America when people moved into cities and had apartments that didn't have parlors and they needed somewhere to be able to take the body. Mm-hmm. So a very interesting piece of real history there. We're going to go to Patricia, who's calling from Frenchville. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
Hello. I have chosen to give my body to science when I die, and I understand that when they're done with whatever is left of you, they normally cremate it and get back to you, and my family has been instructed to cast me about in all my favorite places, but I don't know how to go about contacting a college or university or med school that needs cadavers.
Okay. Well, Allison, do you have any guidance for Patricia?
I do, and my colleagues can help me here. I think the University of Southern Maine has a program for body donation?
No.
University of New England.
Sorry, University.
And on the home, last things is the website I maintain that talks about home funerals. And on there, there's a link to the body donor program at the University of New England. It's something you have to apply in advance and or make the arrangement in advance with them before you can. You can't call them up at the time of death and ask them if they'll take it.
I think it appeals to a lot of people to be able to donate one's body to science, to think, well, you know, if I'm going to die, you know, let's have some good come out of this. Are there certain kinds of people that medical schools or researchers are looking for, or certain ages, people with certain kinds of diseases?
Well, I would just say you do have to talk to them ahead of time, as Chuck says, and make alternate plans. Because it is possible that they may not be looking for the type of body that your family has or your loved one has at the moment of death. That may not be what they need. So you do have to work with them.
I agree with that. For those folks that are interested in donation, when we talk to them, we always recommend just make sure you have a plan B in case the school rejects the body at the time of death for whatever reason. And the other part of that, what we've learned is sometimes people think about the donation and then they utilize that in lieu of any type of gathering or service. And I had a personal friend of mine, a Rotarian friend of mine, who donated his body to science. And it was very important to him. And his wife called me a couple of days after he passed, and she said, well, Bob wanted to be donated, which we did, but what should we do? And I said, well, we obviously can do whatever you want to do, but, you know, he was well-known in our community, friends for years through Rotary, and so we talked a little bit about it, and they belonged to one of our local churches, and so we ended up having a memorial service for Bob. So I always put that out there, again, kind of going back to offering my experience to families. You know, it may not be right for another family, but my feeling is I'd rather give you information so you can make an educated decision versus not knowing or finding out later, geez, Mike never said anything to us. So,
all right. Thank you, Patricia, for your question. Another Patricia writes on Facebook, my husband is a woodworker and has spoken often about making caskets once he retires. We wondered where one would store your casket if you had one made ahead of time, and came up with the idea of a coffin table instead of a coffee table. Chuck, what do you think of that idea?
I think that the coffins I make, are some of them are intended to be used as furniture until they and you can't tell they're coffins until the actual need arises. And there are, on the Last Things website again, there are plans, note cost plans for six different coffins that are just will guide people through the process. And if anybody wants to make their own coffin, I'd be delighted to help them out.
And you say you've had coffins that are used as furniture in the meantime. What kind of furniture?
Well, I have one that is a bookcase coffin, but it's not just a box up there. It's actually two boxes hinged together so that it's a real bookcase. And adjustable shelves and everything, and I really like it. One of my friends has one of those in her living room, and she just loves it when she has new friends over for dinner. And it'll be a lull in the conversation, and she'll just drop into that's her coffin over in the corner just to see what's going to happen.
Jennifer, if I could add to that, it's your right as a consumer to bring your own coffin to a funeral home. Most good funeral homes will, if you say, my husband built my coffin and we used it as a coffee table for 10 years. You know, someone like Mike will probably say, great, you know, we're happy to use your coffin. And federal law says that consumers are allowed to bring their own coffin or a shroud that they have sewn themselves and work with a funeral director with that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And yes, we would work with a family. We've done it many times. And I always preface that, you know, if that's something of interest to you, that consult with your local funeral home so that you can get the correct dimensions. That's very important. And that also goes for urns as well.
All right. And we have an email from Leona. I would like to know where to obtain information as how to establish a green cemetery? If someone has land and would like to establish one, do you all have an idea where they would turn?
I do. Come to our event tomorrow in Falmouth. But also there is a certifying organization nationally called the Green Burial Council. They have a website. They are a nonprofit that certifies burial grounds around the country. They have their website has a lot of information. Chuck and I are working, and Chuck has a very good manual he's putting together. There are two green cemeteries that are being formulated in Maine right now. The Maine Veterans Cemetery in Augusta is going to be adding a green section, and the Kennebec Land Trust, land conservation organization, is in the early phases of planning a green natural burial area. So Chuck has been talking to both of them, looking at soil scientist reports about what kind of soils are the best. Basically, to start a new green cemetery, you have to form a nonprofit board that oversees the care of the cemetery. And, the state of Maine has fairly light regulations about how to work on forming a new cemetery, and the state would be happy to work with you about the formation of that.
Great. Well, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dehan Wealth Advisors, an independently owned wealth management firm providing investment advice to individuals, families, and institutions. Information at DEIGHAN.com. And UMaine's Collin Center for the Arts with Bella Fleck, Zakir Hussain, and Edgar Meyer with Rakesh Jarasia, November 18th.
Mostly white Vermont has one of the highest African-American incarceration rates in the country.
Is it that black and brown people are just inherently more criminal? Or is there a problem with this system?
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll listen in on a discussion of racism in the state's criminal justice system. Plus, we'll learn about the role that New England colonists played in the golden age of piracy. And we'll survey election results from around our region. Please join us.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was outside just sitting in the car listening to the radio.
Oh, another one of those driveway moments.
Yeah, but not exactly what you think.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, the Public Radio's got a fundraiser coming up.
Yeah, sure, Super Thursday. Well, I knew it was coming sometime.
That's what I was listening to. They're actually talking about it.
So?
Well, you know how everybody loves the one day the Super Thursday thing.
Of course. What about it?
Apparently, that has not been working as well as we all thought.
Really?
Yeah, they say they do raise the support that's needed, but you know how they've been talking about new members a lot lately?
Yeah, they have.
Well, apparently that's the part that hasn't been working. They say not enough new listeners are joining in, and they also say the one-day campaign makes it easy for folks who might support them to ignore everything.
Are you saying they're going back to days and days and days?
Well, yes and no. This coming campaign will be a three-day event so that they can make sure that potential new supporters really hear those messages over and over a few times, and hopefully jump in with the rest of us.
I guess that makes sense, but I've really come to love the one-day thing. We've been lucky.
Well, we have been, but the one-day event isn't going away. This one will be 3 days, and importantly, that may not be all that bad because they're saying as soon as those new member goals, along with the dollar goals, of course, are met, they'll shut the whole thing down, so it may not be that bad or last that long after all.
I hope so.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Modern Funeral Planning. My guest today, Mike Hall with Hall Funeral Homes, Allison Rector with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, and Chuck Lakin, who is a home funeral advocate. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to an email from Lenny. Lenny writes, I encourage everyone to have these uncomfortable conversations with aging parents. Neither of my parents was embalmed as they wished. However, my mother died at 97, 7 years after our father died. She told me she wished Dad had been cremated as she wanted to be. She also said that she wished they had established a home burial plot on the family farm. I was astounded that they hadn't had these discussions after 67 years of marriage. Allison, it doesn't surprise you that they never had this discussion, does it?
No, these are really hard conversations to have, and most people are averse to talking about death. But talking about it ahead of time is really a gift to you give to your family members. And not only saying, I want to be cremated or I want to be buried, but, you know, who do I want to handle my body? Where do I want my body to go? What is it an environmental concern to me? What happens to my body after I die? You know, does that factor into the decision? And I think that consumers we at the end of life are uniquely vulnerable. It's a uniquely vulnerable moment in our lives. We're consumers. This is something that 100% of us are going to have to face and deal with at some point. And funeral prices can be hard to get, and they're really hard to talk about in the moment of crisis. So if families can talk about these things ahead of time, shop ahead of time, it's going to benefit the family and you to do that.
Chuck, did you want to talk about some more resources for people to talk about this?
Yeah, there's, in addition to that, I hadn't heard of this event this month, and I want to see that list of questions a lot. But there's also already Ellen Goodman, prize-winning reporter for Boston Globe, has formed the Conversation Project as a result of her experience when her mother died. And they have a starter kit that is, I think, the best way of leading people into that conversation that I've found so far. But there are other places. There's a set of cards called the Go Wish cards, and you can just go wish. If you just type Go Wish cards, you'll find it, and you can see the way that they will help you, help the person kind of express their values without having to say them, because they can pick things. There's a group called Death Over Dinner. This guy has set up an organization where he will arrange, he will help you arrange a dinner, have friends over for dinner. He will supply suggested readings, videos, books, or articles to get the conversation going. And it's a really, I think he said they've had over 130,000 attendees at these events just in the past few years.
Great. And we'll provide links to all of those on our webpage and on our Facebook page. We're going to go so many questions, try to get through as many as possible in this hour. We'll go to John in Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. I'm very interested in the green burial. It's a wonderful idea not to have a large impact when you're done. There is an issue that came to my attention a while ago, and I don't know if I'm still current on it, and that is particularly with respect to cremations. Many of us have amalgam fillings, and if those go into a crematorium, it sends mercury up into the sky and settles onto the land and water. It seems a little bit difficult to grapple with the idea of removing teeth with mercury amalgam fillings beforehand.
Sure, John. A good question. Does anybody know? Chuck, you know.
The alternative to a flame cremation is alkaline hydrolysis or natural green cremation, in which you're using water treated with phosphates to get the pH up to 14 to dissolve all the soft tissues of the body. It's the environmentally responsible version of a cremation, in that because you're heating water to 200 degrees instead of a retort to 1800 degrees, you're only using 10 to 15% of the energy of the flame cremation, and you're putting no pollutants into the atmosphere.
So how does one do that? Is this in a tank of some sort, or is it somebody wrapped into a fabric that's been soaked?
The body is put into a stainless steel cylinder, and then the water is pumped into that, and pumps are used to swirl the water around the body until all the soft tissue is gone. So what's left over is the skeleton, which is what's left over after a flame cremation. And, you know, what they call ashes are not ash. They're actually just bone fragments that have been run through what's functionally an industrial-sized blender. And so it looks a little different, because after the alkaline hydrolysis, what you get is a white powder as opposed to the grayish, tan, coarse sand texture that's usually the result of the flame cremation. The crematory in Belfast is the only one in the state that, in fact, the only place in New England that has the equipment to do that. And you can direct cremation of Maine.
Okay, and how many people still have the amalgam fillings with mercury? Is that common?
Yes.
Still?
Yes. Right now, a measurable amount of the mercury in the atmosphere comes from the mercury that's in the fillings of teeth that were cremated. And in places like England, where the cremation rate is about 80%, about 15% of the mercury pollution there is from the fillings, mercury that's in fillings.
One question that we like to ask occasionally is, you know, what is more environmentally friendly, the choice to be buried or to be cremated? And there are advantages and disadvantages and costs to both. And, you know, cremation doesn't take up land the way a burial choice does, and it can be more convenient for the family. But it does use a fair amount of fossil fuel to accomplish the flame cremation, and then the concern about the emissions.
I'd like to go back to the planning part a little bit. It's really important, although difficult at times, to have the conversation as a family. But it's really important. Ideally, if parents and their children can get together to talk about wishes, but also talk about the needs of the survivors, because as a funeral director, we help families come together however they want to do it, to basically acknowledge the loss with their family, their community, and friends, and help get them on a path, a grieving path, hopefully to grief resolution. You know, and there's a lot of people who are saying, geez, I don't want to do anything. We're just going to talk about the disposition, leaving the family with, okay, what direction do we go? If you talk to 2/3 of folks who are with grief psychologists today across this country, are there because they're there because they never really faced a form of loss, whether it was divorce, death, whatever that loss may have been. They never faced it. I mean, Helen Keller said it best. If you want to get to the other side, you have to go through the door. You can't go around it. And I think society, we're so fast-paced today. We want to go to an event and have it happen and be over, and then our grief is done. But that's not reality. Grief is a process. It's individual. It takes time. So our job is to help listen and help facilitate that so people can go on a normal path.
And we started the program by hearing Chuck's personal story. You know, the story about his wife being cared for at home, and the friends coming and being able to write on the top of her coffin, write messages. That's exactly what Mike is talking about, a way for family and friends to be involved in the process in a hands-on way that helps with grief.
John, thank you for your question, a good question. Marty on Facebook wants to let us know that Husson University also accepts bodies for their physical therapy students. Thanks for that. And Sarah wants to know in an email, is it still considered a green or natural burial if you want to be buried with some personal items, such as jewelry, letters, crystals, etc.?
Yes, if they biodegrade.
Ah, okay.
Or ask. Each cemetery gets to make their own rules,
okay.
And so just ask.
And Ben says, my wife and I operate a glassblowing studio in Woolwich. Over the years, we've made custom urns and other memorial products. Recently, we started a line of glass orbs with ashes encased within. So far, it's a word-of-mouth business, but I'd like to know where to direct my marketing, to funeral homes or directly to consumers. How to get around the awkward part of selling something to people suffering after a loss, which has prevented us from pushing this product or service in advertising. Mm.
I would recommend that you reach out to the Maine Funeral Directors Association and their members. It's a great place to start. As part of the change, there's a lot of cremation keepsakes for families and personal things, and that glass being a part of that. So I would highly recommend that.
Okay, great. And we'll go to Bobby, who's calling from Conway, New Hampshire. Hi, Bobby. Go ahead.
Hi there, Jennifer. Thanks a lot for this conversation. I wondered if there is, I know there used to be many years ago, but is there still burial at sea?
All right, good question. We're almost out of time. Who wants to jump in and talk about burial at sea?
Yes, there is. And there are 3 places in Maine that can help families with that service. And again, I go right back to the Last Things website. They are linked on the Last Things website.
All right. Well, thank you, Bobby. And we are out of time. Almost forgot it's Friday when we get out a little bit early. Thank you all for joining us here today. Allison Rector, a board member of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Maine, Chuck Lake, and a retired Colby College librarian and home funeral advocate, and Mike Hall, president of Hall Funeral Homes. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandrow. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.